This is Ryan Archidak, and I shout out to the Bulls HQ podcast, all the way from Australia. We represent, and thanks for all the support.
Fans, welcome to another episode of Bulls HQ, a Chicago Bulls podcast on the Blue Wire Sports Podcasting Network. Thank you for joining us on this episode of Bulls HQ. Another loss. It just seemingly whenever I get to do a Bulls podcast, like it's always coming after a loss for whatever reason. I don't know if I'm the jinx in that scenario, or if the Bulls just are a average basketball team who like losing games when I'm watching. Whatever the scenario is, it's very, very annoying having to podcast straight after Bulls basketball games, and we are coming at you straight after the Bulls. Just got absolutely pants by the Utah Jazz, which wasn't totally surprising, but at the same time, very deflating. And I'm very thankful in those situations when the Bulls do get well and truly beat that I have some guests on to help me sort of digest and go through what we've just witnessed. So I want to bring in my guests for today. So these two lads have recently started their own Bulls podcast. If you're not catching Bulls 101, then I strongly suggest you do so. But these guys are on all your audio platforms. They're even doing their show on YouTube. I want to welcome in Laro Golden and Chris Amundsen from Bulls 101. Boys, how are you guys going?
Yo, 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 yo. How you doing, man? How you doing? Thanks for having us on, man.
No problem, mate. I've been meaning to get you guys on because I wanted to do this pretty much from the minute you guys said you guys wanted to launch into the Bulls podcasting world, which is very interesting timing on your behalf. I think you guys were 3 weeks into it. So, welcome to Bulls podcasting, particularly with this team is sort of losing all these games. But, thanks for coming on. Like I said, I want to talk Bulls. I want to get your insight because I thoroughly enjoy watching your show because you guys go to a level of analysis that I don't think many others do, which is why I wanted to get you on and get your takes about the Bulls, specifically, you know, what we've seen over the last week in terms of win, losses, those sorts of things. But given that we're literally a couple of days away from the NBA trade deadline and this team seemingly having to make some decisions, it's an interesting time to be a Bulls fan, to be a Bulls podcaster, all that sort of stuff. So, Laro, maybe I can swing to you first, mate. I mean, what have you seen over the last week of Bulls basketball? I mean, they can't beat the good teams. They beat the bum teams. How does that dictate what they're going to do with the trade deadline? Maybe you can just give me your high-level thoughts of where your mind is at with the Bulls, and then we can, Chris can share his thoughts on that too.
First of all, man, I appreciate you saying high level, brother. I appreciate that. For me, I mean, today, before we get to today, I'll go before. So, I mean, what we've learned, at least from my point of view, is that this team is missing pieces, which we already know. And it's been frustrating. I mean, even against teams that we should beat, you play down to their level. Really, the only person you can really trust on is Zach. He's been kind of the most consistent player outside of like Thad. And what we're learning is slowly but surely is that we're just not ready. We're not ready. We need to add more pieces. We have a team that's just so flawed. And it's just been really frustrating. And to go off of that, I'll fast forward till tonight. Is tonight you really saw the difference between the levels, you know, Utah being the high level and us. I mean, I can't even say what level we're at because it's almost like we're bum slayers. We beat the teams that are really bad. And then when we see the teams like the Jazz, we're just out of we're nowhere near that league. And it's frustrating, mostly because you get put in a situation where you won't be able to get a good pick because you're good enough to beat the bad teams, and then you're just not good enough to have some type of optimism to go into the playoffs and maybe make some noise or gain some experience for the young guys. And I mean, my thoughts are a little bit all over the place. So I mean,
no, I mean, look, that makes sense given that the team is literally all over the place. I mean, one day you're feeling good about them, and look, I fall victim to this all the time. Like I think I had a podcast last week where I was talking about how, you know, I was pleased with how they performed against the Raptors in OKC, and you know, given you know it was a small sample size against teams that were playing depleted lineups, but you know, you sort of fall into the rhythm of these games. Your mood gets swung by the rhythm of these games, and yeah, I mean, they win, you feel good. They lose, you feel bad. Your whole world is imploding, and you're wondering what the hell is meant to be happening. But I don't know. I think we've reached the point now where we've got 40-odd games of, well, 44, I think it is, or 42 games of data at this point to suggest this team is beating the teams that they should, which is good, which is, I guess, a step forward. But they really can't compete against the teams that are above them. And not that I was expecting them to beat the Utah Jazz. Like, in isolation, this loss is whatever, but maybe in culmination with what we saw against the Spurs last week, then the Nuggets on Friday night, like two games that should have been W's that ultimately turned into losses because this team just can't execute. Like, that's where my frustration is. And I don't know, I guess because of all that, like, they have to do something substantial, I think, at the deadline. I don't know how you can sort of go through the motions and do not much else or keep this team beyond the deadline. But I don't know how you feel about it, Chris, but I mean, I'm assuming you feel similarly to myself and Lara. It kind of feels like most of the fan base feels like that at this point. But what are your thoughts, mate?
Well, if I could be the voice of optimism, hopefully here for a minute, because I know it's depressing to come on a podcast right after a loss like this to the Jazz. And you're right. We should be beating the bad teams. We weren't even there last year. We couldn't even beat the bad teams last year. This year, we've upped a level. We're beating the bad teams. Haven't beat those good teams. But for the most part, you know, this loss aside, most of the games that we've been in against good teams, you know, we've been up or we've been in it the whole game until the end. Now, obviously, the late game execution has been pretty bad. But it's kind of expected. You know, we know, and also AK and Eversley know, that this team really, really needs a point guard. They really need an organizer. So I don't know how much we should be surprised that we're driving a car without a steering wheel and we're getting mad when there's bumps in the road and we're veering off course. It's, you need that steering wheel. You need the organizer of your offense to keep things going. Lowry, as we know, is a player who needs things set up for him, and he can exceed in that way. You know, Wendell is in that same boat. Kobe needs someone to handle the ball so he can focus on what he's good at. So a lot of our young guys and the disappointment that's come with them, I think, has a lot to do with the fact that we really haven't found the driver of our offense. Zach's taken a huge leap. So, I mean, I really want to be positive here because we're in it. We're right in it. And that's why those losses against Denver and the Spurs and some other ones this year have been so devastating, because you can see the team running well sometimes and for long stretches, and they just can't get it done at the end. And that's where I don't think it's time necessarily to panic. You know, we're not, I see a lot of Bulls fans on Twitter and Discord and other places that are just like, blow it all up, trade all the young guys, you know, we suck, doom and gloom. But I really don't think it's that bad. I think we're moving in the right direction, but not fast enough to where we really want to go right now. And with the draft coming up, I get it. I get the frustration here because, as you mentioned, we're not bad enough to get a really good draft pick, but we're not good enough to make any noise in the playoffs and feel like we're actually making progress. But I think this deadline is going to be a good first test, if you will, for AK and Mark Eversley to show us what they think of the roster, because we really haven't seen it up to this point.
Yeah, I mean, all fair points, and I definitely appreciate you balancing my negative takes at the moment with some level of optimism, so I appreciate that. But at the same time, like, are the Bulls, maybe the Bulls play 45, 42, 43 minutes of good basketball because the pressure during those first 42 to 43 minutes of the game aren't extreme, let's say, whereas like we saw against the Spurs, like we saw against the Nuggets, or even like the Jazz tonight, where it just wasn't competitive for a large portion of the game. Like, the minute the pressure is just amplified just that little bit more, this team really reverts back to those bad old habits. And I guess, like you said, like, part of it is just due to the fact that they just don't have enough experience on the floor, don't have enough capable ball handling, don't have someone out there to really lead the ship when the execution errors just start piling up, which is, again, like, and that was the theme last season. They just couldn't They just couldn't execute. It's been a theme to some degree this season as well. So it's certainly structural. It's certainly roster based. And, you know, maybe if that lead creator was here in Chicago, things would just be better organized or a little bit neatly more organized. The hierarchy would sort of settle a little bit more nicely, let's say. But we kind of already knew that coming into the season, which, again, you're right in saying that. But, like, given that we've gone this far, like, it kind of is important at this point for someone like AK, Mark Eversley, etc., to really target that type of guard if you can actually get your hands on that type of guard at this deadline for a number of reasons, which I've gone over on this podcast. I'm sure you guys, I know you guys have covered it on your show as well, but, like, I guess I'm at the point mentally where I've seen enough. Like, the team is 19 and 23. They've got the Cavs on Wednesday night. Then after the trade deadline, or the trade deadline happens on Thursday, then post the trade deadline, they have a really, really difficult 9-game stretch. And I'm just going to read these games out in terms of what the schedule is coming up. But post the deadline, they've got 8 road games, 8 out of 9 games are on the road. So the first 4 are at San Antonio, at Golden State, at Phoenix, at Utah. Then they come home to play the Brooklyn Nets before going on the road again for a 5-game stand, actually. So it's at Indiana, at Toronto, at Atlanta, at Minnesota, at Memphis. So, like, that 10-game stretch is rough. And I guess I'm at the point mentally where I've seen enough to suggest that this team, as currently constructed, maybe they get into the play-in just because the East is so terribly bad, but I'm starting to think about next season already. I'm starting to think about how we can maximize Zach LaVine's prime at this point, because I don't know what else there is really to get out of this season going forward. So to me, this trade deadline is, I won't say it's make or break for AK, because, like, that is too extreme, but, like, the positivity, the good graces that I've given kind of shows up until this point. Like, if we go past this deadline and nothing happens, I don't know if I can be an optimist like you are, Chris. So I don't know how you feel about that, Laro. Maybe I can bring you to my dark side over here. But how are you feeling about, like, if we get to the deadline and AK does nothing, let's say, how would you, as a fan, as a podcaster, how would that sit with you?
For me, right? So, optimist side, okay, if AK doesn't make a move, okay, well, this is a season where it's weird. Team, the play-in games have given teams this false hope that they can make the playoffs, so they don't want to make a move. So it would be tough to make a move. And then the other side of me is like, there's no way, after you've seen what you've seen, that you couldn't find a way to make a move. Like, there's no way you need this long of an evaluation on these certain players that we have. Like, there's nothing to me that shows that with these last however many games that are left, that something's going to change. Like, nothing is showing me from Lowry that, oh man, he's rebounding better, he's a better team defender, he's adding stuff to his game. Not really. Kobe, people always say, you know, first year as a point guard is always tough. That's very true. But usually when you have a strength, you lean on that strength until you maximize your weaknesses. And right now, his scoring is not being maximized. It's very inconsistent. His defense is still porous. He can't really stay in front of anybody. He's, you know what, I can't be super mad on Otto, because I feel like he's starting to get his legs back. He's starting to get his wind back. He's starting to play a little bit better. He's getting more lift on his jump shot. So I'm kind of optimistic that he's going to start playing better and more consistently. And I mean, out of that bunch, man, like, it's just tough to say for AK to come out, sit in front of the cameras and talk to certain people that are asking him questions and say, you know what, guys, we're not making a move, or we couldn't make the move. We couldn't make any moves. Like, what message is that sending to Zach? You know, like, Zach is out there trying to put this team on his back and hoping that something happens. Like, obviously Zach's not going to be downing his teammates and saying, you guys are horrible, none of that. He's going to keep that inside and be a great teammate. But you got to know that Zach is probably going home talking to his wife, talking to his dad, talking to his friends. Like, guys, like, I don't know what else I can do. Like, I don't know, man. So, I mean, it's tough, man. That's at least how I feel about that situation.
Yeah, I think we're aligned in that sense. But like Chris, like, I mean, AK made those comments around, you know, there being delusional teams right now who maybe think they can get into the play-in tournament, who maybe want to be buyers at the deadline, but maybe should be sellers. And I keep coming back to that comment, and I wonder if that comment is going to come back to bite AK in the event that they do nothing, or if, you know, they make a move on the periphery, but don't necessarily change the structure of the actual rotation. I wonder if that comment's going to come back to bite him in the ass somewhat. So, I mean, how are you feeling about this notion of whether the Bulls should be buyers, should they be sellers? I mean, just specifically what we've seen over the last week, where we've seen them beat up on a bad Raptors team, a bad OKC team, a bad Pistons team, but then, you know, lose in embarrassing fashion to actual good competitive teams. Like, is he delusional in some senses if he doesn't make any move of sorts?
I can see it kind of both ways here as well, just because the guy that we really need, which is that veteran facilitator, isn't really available here at the trade deadline, in my opinion. I mean, unless it's Kyle Lowry, but I really don't think he's interested in coming to our team versus another team like Miami or Philadelphia. Yeah. So in that sense, if you're looking for a long-term solution at point guard or at the creator position, if you will, I don't think you're going to find that at the deadline. So in that sense, I don't really expect AK to make a move to address that position or to address that flaw. But I do think you can find long-term pieces that can fit going forward at the trade deadline or be creative with trades. I mean, for example, if something I was thinking about today, if Miami wanted to get in on Kyle Lowry, they got to move out some salary, and Kelly Olynyk, Andre Iguodala, and Goran Dragic, those are guys that have, you know, decent contracts that maybe we could pluck one of those guys and help our, you know, either our point guard position, our small forward, or our center, all three of which we've had issues with throughout the season. So I think the AK can be creative, and there's opportunities there at the trade deadline. And I think we're in a really good spot as far as what kind of array of contracts that we have to be able to facilitate deals. So I think the opportunities are there. It's probably not going to be to bring in a point guard, because I just don't think that one's available. And maybe not even this offseason, unless Spencer Dinwiddie, you know, his recovery goes really well and he's ready to, you know, contribute. It's kind of a tough proposition. But if he does nothing, okay, I can kind of understand. But some part of me will definitely be disappointed, because at least for me, we've seen the evaluation at this point of Lowry, and while he has, I think, great value on his current contract, the proposition of paying him, you know, Bertans money or more has made me a little nervous, and I would maybe start to question his basketball acumen if he thought that Lowry was worth that kind of contract. And so I would expect something to happen. And we've also got these guys in, you know, the 12 through 15 spots on our roster that really aren't adding a whole lot, that I think he could move and bring in some other guys, even if it's, you know, a buy low prospect like Troy Brown Jr., or maybe we can get in on Cam Reddish, who's had another tough year, something like that, where we can buy low on a candidate and use our, you know, our facilities and our player, you know, pro player, quote unquote, development staff to help these guys out. So I feel like they need to do something. They need to switch it up somehow. Although I don't have a lot of faith that we're going to find a lot of long-term solutions at that creator spot in the deadline.
Yeah, I think that's certainly fair. And I guess the name that most Bulls fans have on the tip of their tongue is Lonzo Ball. But to your point, and I don't know, maybe you agree with me on this, but I mean, Lonzo Ball is an elite creator. He's a smart basketball player, obviously can create on possessions, but, you know, probably hasn't turned out to be like that natural facilitating point guard that a lot of people thought he might be when he came into the draft. Obviously, very smart player, can create plays, amazing in transition, but it's probably, I guess, because just due to the fact that he's not necessarily a huge half-court threat beyond his catch-and-shoot shots, that he's not going to go in the lane and, you know, start dishing like Chris Paul or Kyle Lowry or any other insert insert any, you know, traditional type point guard who can create plays for others at a pick and roll type thing. Lonzo isn't that type of player, but he is the type of player that the Bulls should be targeting. So I don't know, like Laro, is it even realistic at this point for the Bulls to actually land someone like Lonzo? I know Kevin O'Connor on the Ringer had a report that the Bulls were actively chasing Lonzo Ball. I mean, he mentioned the Atlanta Hawks too. I think Zach Lowe was it today, or someone else at least had a report that the Denver Nuggets are interested in Lonzo Ball as well. So there's seemingly a market for Lonzo, but I don't know if the Bulls can get in on that. I'd love to see that happen just because I want to see the Bulls acquire good two-way smart players, which Lonzo is. He doesn't solve all the problems that Chris sort of noted just below, but or just before rather. But in terms of your expectations, the likelihood of Lonzo being a Bull post the Thursday deadline, do you think it's likely? Do you think it's unlikely? How are you feeling about that one?
I believe, I don't want to sound like the guy, but I believe it's 50-50, right? And why I say that is I feel like just the snippet that we got from AK and his presser that he did, it sounds like he was active in making calls, and that's why he made that comment about teams being delusional. There's no way he would know that if he wasn't talking to GMs or anything like that. So I believe we could make that he could be a part of this team. I really do think they can make a push for it. I honestly feel like a change – like this sounds bad, but I'm not a Kobe hater. Don't get me wrong, but I think like maybe putting Kobe in the deal now can enter it. You know, you can now put Kobe in that thought of like, okay, you know what? If they want Kobe, take him. But like, this is my thought on Lonzo and his creation and things like that on offense. Like, if you're expecting Lonzo to be like, you know, a Luka and handle the ball and all of the offense is on his shoulders, I don't believe he can do that. But if you look at the type of offense that we're running, you know, insert Lonzo into the way we're using Kobe, and I truly believe he can do what they're trying to get Kobe to do. I believe Lonzo is a pretty good pick and roll player. I believe he understands how to read defenses. He understands how to go against drop coverage. He understands reading the tag man, and his passing ability is there, and his shooting ability we're starting to see is getting there. So it's I understand that like there's some skepticism about his creation, but I do believe in the offense that Billy wants to run, he can be good in it. And now if we were, like I said, if we were expecting him to be like his brother, younger brother, or Luka, or any of those guys, then we have a problem. Then our aspirations for him are maybe a little bit too high, or expectations, I should say. So, but I do believe he can be effective in the offense that Billy wants to run. A lot of ball movement, a lot of pin down stuff for Zach. If you can just get Zach off the ball and allow Lonzo to bring the ball up, protect the ball, not turn the ball over, and just allow Zach to roam off free. And heck, maybe if we do keep Kobe in the deal and we somehow get Lonzo, I do believe Kobe can be more effective off the ball, not asking him to do some of the things that they're asking him to do. So, I mean, I'm optimistic. I think we can be in that deal. I think we can get him. I do.
Look, I'm not going to lie, Lara. I was kind of hoping I could bring you over to the dark side whilst Chris is, you know, on the light side, let's say. But you're falling. Chris has got too much of a hold on you, I think, too much of an influence on you. But look, I know. No, definitely not. Definitely not. But I take your point. And look, at this point, I think the Bulls should just be. They should just be, like, just trying to acquire, like I said, good, smart players, guys who lift the baseline of this team, which obviously Lonzo would do. Obviously, if you're acquiring Lonzo, then you're acquiring with the hope of maybe bringing him back on some sort of deal beyond this season, given he's a restricted free agent, which is why, from a Bulls point of view, it would make sense to maybe just switch him and Lowry, and given that they both are restricted free agents coming up. But look, I can't imagine the Pelicans being interested in Lowry Markkanen. I don't know if any other teams are going to be interested in Lowry, but he is seemingly the player where I keep coming back to as to where the biggest decision is this week. I mean, we can talk about trading Kobe. We can talk about trading Wendell, Otto, Sato, whoever it might be. And look, there's reasons for why that may make sense for each of those singular players as to why it may make sense to deal them. But the time is effectively ticking on Lauri Markkanen like it isn't with someone like Kobe or Wendell. That isn't to say those guys are long for Chicago, but the fact that Lauri is literally, you know, maybe playing the last 30-odd games of his career in Chicago, assuming he makes it past this deadline, there is a clock ticking for Lauri like it's not for others. So, I don't know, like, what signal does it send, Chris, if Lauri is here post the deadline? I mean, I would assume that, to me at least, it feels like they value Lauri highly if they can't necessarily move him and try to get some value to him. Of course, naturally, they can maybe try to organize a sign and trade, or maybe just sign him and try to trade him at a later point. But to your eyes, at least, like, if the Bulls were to keep Markkanen post this deadline, and if we learned that they weren't necessarily even shopping him around because they value him, let's say, like, what sort of message would that send to you if the Bulls are really in on a player like Lauri Markkanen?
Well, as I said before, I think it would cause me to question a little bit the basketball knowledge, because Lauri has value where he's at. And as you mentioned with Kobe and Wendell, okay, they've been kind of up and down, right? A lot of people are disappointed in all three of these guys right now. But Kobe and Wendell are making $5.5 million a year. And Wendell's going to make like $7 million next year. And Kobe's going to make $7 million next year. You've got time to make that decision. And I think the longer that Kobe and Wendell are in a system with Billy Donovan and, you know, they had half a season of competent coaching in their entire career. And same with Lauri, right? So at some point, I don't think you should give up on guys that are like 21 years old, or even Lauri. I don't think you should give up on a 23-year-old. He's got these skills. You see it every once in a while. Laro and I talked about it on our show on Saturday. You see these flashes from Lauri where he gets in the post and punishes guys. Tonight against the Jazz, I thought he had a couple nice drives. He, you know, powered against Gobert once. Gobert almost blocked it, or maybe did block it, but still went in. He's got these flashes, but as you mentioned, the time is running out on his contract. That's the real issue. So if they have to make a decision, if they don't move him, it signals to me either A, that they really do value him or are going to match, or that they didn't get the type of value back that they thought they should in a trade. And so maybe they think the market is suppressed enough where the value of that contract as a tradable asset down the line may be worth signing it versus whatever assets they could get at the deadline. Or they may just really like him. And if they really like him, that's fine, but we got to make other moves then, because Lauri can work in a specific system. I think he can be very effective where you've got a really fantastic point guard and some really good perimeter and interior defenders around him to kind of mask those deficiencies. But right now, this team doesn't have any of that. And so Lowry's getting exposed. Wendell's getting exposed. Kobe's getting exposed. I mean, you name it, you go down the line, this team has not functioned as a group effectively enough for long enough periods, you know, to justify paying him the type of money that he's going to want to have in the offseason. So that's kind of where I'm at with it. But I don't think I'd be out on AK like maybe some people would. But it would be a little disappointing, or at least I would question what their plan going forward is.
Yeah, so again, I don't want to be too dramatic here, but if Lauri is here post this deadline, I'm not out on AK, let's say. He would still have time, but I'm very much out on Lauri Markkanen at this point. I don't know what else I need to see to change my opinion, I suppose. Like, I just feel the way I feel. Like, I've been long beating the drum that first 15 or so games of his season that we saw this season was just a hot streak. It's seemingly proving to be that way because his last six games, well, they just haven't been good. I mean, the last six games for Lauri Markkanen, 13.2 points per game, shooting 37.8% from the field, 29.3% from three. The majority of his offense comes from the three-point line at this point. I don't think his role has drastically changed from Boylan to Donovan, in large part because I just view him as that type of player. And just from a defensive standpoint, I mean, you guys have sort of highlighted on your show when you do your breakdown from a clip point of view that, you know, he's just not there defensively, and he's just not giving you anything else on offense either. I mean, one assist per game, not great. If you're averaging more turnovers than assists, that's not ideal. So, I don't know. I there's nothing more for me to see from Lowry at this point that is going to change my mind. And I don't know, I would be very concerned if he's here post the deadline. I mean, even if you can just get something of value back from him, I'm not expecting the world for something from Lowry, but if you can just get something back for Lowry, and I mean, his cap hold is $20.1 million in the offseason. I would argue that getting rid of Lowry now, getting some sort of asset back and using that cap space of $20-odd million to maybe go and get a Satoransky-level player or a Thad Young-level player in during this offseason, like, that's going to have more value to someone like Zach LaVine, to Patrick Williams, to this team as a winning organization, let's say. That's going to have more value than, you know, bringing back Lowry Markkanen on $16, $18, $20 million type contract per season. So, I don't know. I don't want to say I'd be completely out on AK, because that sounds very reactionary and very doggable nation, as my friend C Red Fred would say. And so I don't want to be that reactionary, but I would be very concerned if he is here post the deadline. But I don't know, mate. Moving away from Lowry, let's talk about guys like Kobe, Sato, Wendell, Lowry. I mean, we've already touched on the fact that, you know, guys like Kobe and Wendell, they have more time, but at the same time, these guys have recently just been benched. The team has signaled that they're, I guess, less interested in developing talent right now. They're trying to win games. At least that's what I've inferred based on this lineup change. But given that these guys have gone to the bench, and I understand it is very early in their careers at the same time, but, you know, we're thinking about the timeline, Zach LaVine's timeline. Like, that's what we should be thinking about. Like, so if it means, like, trading Kobe White and a first-round pick, or Wendell and a first-round pick, or whatever it might be, to go and, you know, enter the chase for someone like Aaron Gordon, who's seemingly available, probably is going to end up on a team like the Celtics, it appears. But, like, should the Bulls be putting these younger guys on the table? Yes, they've been, I guess, I was going to say tortured, maybe that's too extreme, but they've gone through the ringer in terms of Jim Boylan's coaching. But are we at the point where we should even be considering about developing these younger guys who don't necessarily project to be anything more than role players, and just putting them on the table with whatever you need to put them on the table with, to go and get players who fit the timeline of Zach LaVine, guys like Lonzo, or even extending that thought out to someone like Aaron Gordon, who hasn't been linked to the Bulls, but is a name I would like to see be linked to the Bulls. I mean, where are you at least with guys like Kobe, Wendell, and, you know, in terms of your willingness to see these guys be put on the block and ultimately traded, like, where are you sort of at on that situation?
I'm at the point where we have to give Zach a sign that we're buying into him, and that we want him to be a part of this, and we want to not just stay where we're at. And that's, and of course, like Chris mentioned, we are showing some improvement. And we're seeing some, you know, good things happen, going in the right direction. But I think for a guy that's 26, that is, I don't think he's at his peak yet. I think he still has maybe another level. And I think we need to get to we need to show him, you know what, Zach, we want you here, and we're going to show you by doing this. And whatever that is, I'd be willing to move like a Kobe or Wendell or Lowry or whatever it takes to show Zach that we're buying into his timeline, and we want that to be here. We want him to be the guy that brings, along with someone else, some glory back to Chicago and all Bulls fans. So I'd be willing to do it. I mean, the thing is some people have to understand, like, coaching, and again, I've never coached at the NBA level, so obviously I've never dealt with egos as big as that. I've never dealt with anything like that. But in terms of, like, dealing with players and their confidence levels, coaching has a lot to do. It's not just X's and O's. It's not just dealing with media, but it's also knowing your players, knowing what they can take, what type of coaching they can take, what's going to hurt them, what's going to bring them up. Billy is with them every single day of their, you know, young careers at the moment right now. So he knows what they can take and what they can't. So I don't think, I really feel like Wendell, there's another level to him, but there, I don't know where this thing came where it's like, it's bad if you need help being a better player. or if you need to depend on another player to be good. Like, that is completely false. Like, I mean, Tyson Chandler, like all these other, these, I could go down a line of good players that needed a good point guard or needed another player that could do the dirty work they weren't good at, but help them just focus on one point of their game that they were really good at that could help a team win. Like, Wendell needs a point guard that understands when he's open, when to throw a lob, when to throw him a bounce pass, when to give him a chest pass, like to know when to get him the ball, you know, not how to set screens up so he doesn't get called for moving screens all the time. Like, people don't notice that. Like, Wendell gets those ticky-tack fouls of setting screens that are very frustrating, but it's also because your Kobe's and sometimes Zach, they get so eager to get off that screen and they don't allow Wendell to set it. And then they, you know, they're blowing the whistle and now he's going the other way because he's getting an offensive foul, you know, and Kobe, I was an optimistic person about Kobe, and I don't want to say it like I'm just totally off the deep end on Kobe, but I'm thinking very, I'm probably like on the lead, you know, with like,
jump, Larry.
You know when,
jump.
You know when Mufasa was looking up and Scar was right there? Like, I'm right there. Like, I'm literally like, you know, Scar's got his foot up and he's about to lift my arm off. Like, and I'm right there with Kobe. And Kobe is frustrating because, like, he was supposed to be this scorer in being able to score in, like, bunches. And he's just, it's so inconsistent, man. And I'm like, and to go back to the original point, I'm willing to put anybody in the deal in order to let Zach know that we're serious as an organization in going forward.
Yeah, that's all fair and good. It is a bit graphic. It was a dark analogy that you drew there, Lara. But at the same time, I kind of was listening to that, and maybe this is a subtle inside joke that maybe some of the listeners won't understand, but I kind of felt like throughout that soliloquy that you were just going on there, you were kind of had our friend Vincent Wong in mind. That's kind of what it felt like. Again, most of the listeners won't understand that, but shout out to Vincent if he's listening. We were probably subtweeting you in that conversation just then, but I guess the more I think about this, and like we can talk about making trades, doing all this at the deadline, doing this and that, but even if they do certain things, like I read off the next 10 games that they've got coming up, and 10 games is pretty significant given that they've only got 30-odd games left in the season. I mean, Chris, even like if they do something at the deadline, maybe it's just a lateral move, maybe it's a swing and a move for Lonzo, or, you know, I don't know what else it may be, but, you know, trading out one player or two, like maybe you trade out Lowry and Kobe, you bring in Lonzo and player X, whatever it might be. Maybe that improves the team by 5, 10, 15%, but given that their schedule coming up is quite difficult, like, is it even going to matter for this season? I guess is my point. Like, is it going to materially change where this season is going? Or, look, I'm certainly not someone that wants to play the tanking game. I'm not a fade for Cade type guy, but given where this season is sort of maybe going for the Bulls more naturally, like, I don't know, like, is any change that they do at the deadline going to materially matter, I guess?
Maybe not for the short term. I mean, it could, but as you mentioned, that schedule gets real tough. And if we're going by our current track record, you can cross off any team with a winning record as a guaranteed loss for the Bulls right now. That yeah. They're just going to lose all those games unless mm-hmm. something changes. And as I mentioned before, I'm not sure you can really find something at the deadline, even if you got Lonzo, by the way, whose price is skyrocketing by the day, it seems. I mean, there, mm-hmm. you see some of the things that are supposedly being offered for him, and I don't know, it's a whole lot, and that's before you have to pay him $20+ million a year. Now, he may be worth it, but it's getting like a dicier prospect every day for me to think about getting Lonzo on this team between the price it would get to trade him and then to pay him. But it's kind of as Laro mentioned, you really want to signal to Zach that you're behind him, that you want to build around him. Don't make the same mistake with Zach that you made with Jimmy Butler. And I still maintain that Jimmy Butler is and was a better all-around player. I don't think that's really too much in question. And I think Jimmy has the creator skills to really take you to a championship-level team, as we've already seen from him last year. And this year, as he's coming back, he's doing the same thing. But what Garpax did was sell on that vision and not give it a chance. And I think with Zach, who came here thinking he was going to be the face of the franchise, I think you got to give him that chance. And I don't see another path. As you said, I mean, we could do the fade for Cade thing, but do we really want to go back down the same path and hope that we get one of those top picks? Because we may not get Cade. We may get pick 7 again. And that's gone really well for us so far. And so it's too depressing. And I think Bulls fans are ready for competency. Even if we're not championship or bust, we want competency. So to answer your question, I don't know if it's going to make a huge difference for this season and the rest of this season. It may, but I think it could make a big difference starting in the off season and for next year and the direction going forward. It'll give the team an identity going forward. That's what a trade at the deadline could do for us.
Yeah, I think that's all good and fair, and I certainly take your point on that. Now, maybe we can divert away from the deadline, because ultimately, you know, we can bang on about what it is, and who the hell knows, by the time this podcast is up and released and people are listening to it, maybe the Bulls have made a move. Probably not, but maybe they have. So maybe we can divert away from the deadline. We'll know in the coming days ultimately what happens, and, you know, I'll be talking about it. You guys will be talking about it on Bulls 101. Let's see what happens, but the last thing I want to talk about is Billy Donovan and his coaching. And I kind of feel bad for always bringing this up on Twitter and maybe even on this show. I've been banging on about this on the show as well. Like, he's been significantly better than Jim Boylan. He's been a godsend from that standpoint. He's just listening to the dude talk is, it's kind of like basketball porn, I guess, because he just, you know, the things he says, it just makes you smarter listening to the guy. And he's just, and the way he says it as well, the way he delivers it, he's very, I don't know, I could just listen to him talk basketball all day, I suppose.
You got me with this one, man. The past.
You've been on a roll. You've been on a roll, brother.
This
we all have our own fetishes.
PG-13.
Look, we're all into our own thing, I guess. Like, you know, I could listen to Billy Donovan talk about basketball all day. That's what gets me going.
It's that accent that does it for you, right? It's the accent.
Yeah, that New York accent. Is it a New York accent? Is that where he's from?
Kind of, yeah, sounds like, I think that. He's from around there somewhere.
Yeah, he's from
New York. It's my thing. It's my thing. But despite me loving the way he talks, some of the things he's doing on court lately has irritated me. And, you know, I've been on this podcast, generally on those solo pods that I do, where I'm sort of just ranting and raving and wondering why certain things are happening. But given I've got you two guys on the show, I thought I'd bounce this off you and just get your take on it, just as a bit of a sense check, just to make sure I'm maybe not a raving lunatic. Maybe I am. Happy for you guys to tell me so. But why not? I get the sense. Yeah, exactly. Why not both? Maybe both is true. But I don't know. There's just been some rotational choices that I just... Maybe my frustration with the team more generally is filtering into this conversation now, where I'm getting a little bit annoyed with Billy's choice from a rotational standpoint, which maybe I shouldn't, because he's dealing with a flawed roster. Obviously, he doesn't have a lot of great choices. Like, that caveat is true. Obviously, that is most certainly true. But at the same time, like, he just does a few things that bother me to the point where I'm like, what are you doing, Billy? Like, an example of that is, like, in this Jazz game when he put out Lauri Markkanen and Luke Kornet, which I understand the logic behind it. Like, you put out someone like Luke Kornet to hopefully draw out Rudy Gobert away from the paint. Like, I get it in theory, but where it sort of breaks down immediately is that Luke Kornet is just a very bad basketball player and can't really shoot the basketball anyway. And even if he is open at the three-point line, teams are not going to defend it because it's Luke freaking Kornet. So with that caveat in mind, like, am I being too harsh when I go after Billy for some of these rotational choices? Like, the Luke Kornet thing, playing Denzel Valentine and Archie Diakono with Kobe White in an all-bench unit at times, like, that frustrates me as well. Like, am I being too harsh? Am I being too impatient? Am I being a little too ridiculous? Tell me. I mean, well, what are your thoughts on Billy's rotation, Lara? I mean, yeah, tell me if I'm being wrong here. I mean, maybe I am, but it's driving me nuts.
Well, now that we're off the basketball porn, but the thing is, right, so what I see, like, when I look at the game and I see rotations like that, I see frustration from a coach. And what I mean by that is, it's like, he had his rotation. He had guys that he trusted. He had a rotation that he liked. And now things have like kind of like started to fall apart, and he's lost trust in those rotations. And now he's like trying his best to find some type of rhythm. He's trying to, you know, maybe Luke is, like I said, Luke is a bad basketball player. And I agree. Ain't nothing much else I can say about that. But like at some point, like you look down the bench, you're like, okay, I don't want to start Luke. All right, Luke, come on, Luke. Let's see what you got. Let's see what you got. We, you know, they ain't doing nothing. Let's see what you got. You know, it gets to that point where it's like, okay, you know what? We got to try something. And I can't play these starters 48 minutes. I got to try something. DG, come on, let's see what you got. You know, like, it's frustration. But then you flip it onto, like, the fan side and guys like us where we watch the game and we get frustrated over things like that. It's totally – I don't think you're wrong by it because it's a great observation. I mean, these lineups have been bad. And, you know, even though somebody can shoot the three, doesn't mean they're going to make the three. And if you look at Luke and you see his numbers, you know, you see a big 7-footer that can stretch the floor, but he doesn't make it anywhere near consistently enough for Rudy to be like, oh, shit, I got to get out there. You know, like, it's just nobody's going to be afraid of Luke Kornet. So I totally agree, and I don't think you're wrong by it. I think it's an observation that is completely true. These rotations that he's putting out there, these lineups that he's putting out there, they're not strong. They're not conducive to winning. And, I mean, but again, I just feel like that's just frustration on his part. Like, he's at a point where he doesn't believe in some of these guys giving him good minutes, so he's willing to try anybody at this point.
Yeah, I think that's all fair. And look, that certainly can be true. And look, to be clear, like on the list of, you know, bad things that are happening with Chicago Bulls basketball, Billy Donovan's rotation is not maybe in the top 10. And it's certainly not determining, you know, the result of this season, let's say. But I guess I'm just projecting forward to maybe when this team is better. Like, is this rotational thing going to be something that we need to keep an eye on with Billy Donovan? I don't know. But, like, right. Even with a flawed roster, to my mind at least, or to my eyes, like, there's just some things that just don't make sense. Like, instead of playing, like, Kobe, Denzel, and Archie Diakono, you know, however many minutes it may be together, like 3 to 5 minutes, whatever that stretch is, can you just manipulate your rotation a little bit more to the point where you've always got one of Sato and Zach on there, or if it's not, you know, Sato and Zach, you've got one of Zach and Thad on the court the entire time. Like, can you do things like that rather than going to 10 or 11 guys? Can you keep the rotation at 9 or whatever it may be? Like, they're little things, they're small things. Maybe I'm being a little bit pedantic, but they're the things that are, I guess, starting to annoy me a little bit because, like, Billy was talking about self-inflicted wounds the other day, about post-game. I can't remember which game it was. It may have been after the Nuggets game. Like, that feels when it was most relevant. So I'll say it was after that game. But, like, some of these rotational choices as well are, I will say, self-inflicted wounds. And I'll come back to the Kornet one because we mentioned Daniel Gafford, and I'm not the biggest Gafford guy, but he had a really good game against the Pistons. Was really good for Wendell when Wendell went out injured with when Otto, you know, seemingly just smashed him in the face because Wendell just, for whatever reason, Wendell's teammates have it out for him. But, like, Gafford was good against the Pistons. So, like, why go to Kornet in that situation instead of Gafford, who literally 24 hours before was really good for you? Again, I understand the logic, but, like we said, Kornet sucks. He's not coming to draw Gobert out of the paint. So, like, I understand the theory, but it's just, was never going to work in practical sense. So, again, I don't know. Maybe I'm being a bit too harsh, but maybe Chris the Optimist can set me back on my set me back in the ways and maybe talk me away from this nonsense that I'm spewing out here, Chris.
Just because you're a good coach doesn't mean you're immune from criticism and you're not perfect. And Billy Donovan has a reputation, and he had this in OKC, where he would try different things during the game, during the regular season. And as Laro mentioned, I think he makes a great point here that sort of sporadic lineup change and people that are randomly coming in and out shows a level of distrust with what's currently happening that he wants to throw stuff at the wall and see if it sticks. Now, as you guys have mentioned, I think anyone could tell you that Lowry and Kornet with Archie Diakono and Denzel and Kobe on the floor is not going to stick, but under any circumstance. But, you know, you never know. And I think something that's interesting is coaches, and Billy Donovan has mentioned this many times, he likes guys to stay ready And so if he randomly pulls guys like Felicio or Cornette or Arch out of the rotation sometimes or into the rotation, he's done it with Denzel as well this year. He's done it with Gafford. Keeps people on their toes. It keeps you ready because you know that at any moment he could pull you into the game and try something and you got to show what you got, like Daniel Gafford did against the Pistons. You know, Wendell went out and Gafford came in and he gave that great energy. And he said after the game that, you know, when he started, he felt like he maybe had taken it for granted. And so I think it helps your team's mental preparedness to have them be ready, right? Because if you're Felicio and you're thinking, I'm never going to see the floor, then maybe you're not as motivated to do that. Or if you're a guy like, you know, Kobe or Wendell or someone who's in the rotation and you're taking it for granted, you know, Billy Donovan can pull a move on you. And like Lowry did, like he did with Lowry tonight, he took Lowry out for basically the entire, you know, half of the third quarter and half of the fourth, like basically an entire quarter of basketball because he just wasn't bringing it the way he wanted him to. So I think it's perfectly fair to criticize the rotations because I honestly thought in that beginning of the second quarter when he had that lineup, the game was lost at that point. And the rest of the night, the Bulls kind of played the Jazz even as far as points. It kind of stayed right around 20 points down. But they got 20 points down because of that lineup at the end of the first and the beginning of the second quarter. And so, you know, you can put that on Billy Donovan, but at the same time, I think it's, you know, you're trying to put a Band-Aid on cancer. Like the symptoms that are being shown here, you know, you can't fix them with a lineup rotation. You can't just blame Billy Donovan for those things. They're emblematic of a much larger problem, and that's he doesn't have enough guys that he can rely on to consistently play basketball on a nightly basis in those types of situations. So, you know, it just goes back to the first part of this, which is, you know, what are we going to do about this? Because we clearly are in a rut where we can't beat these great teams. We see the flashes, but the consistency, it just hasn't been there this year so far.
Yeah, all good points. I mean, that is certainly true. And maybe I'm just picking on, you know, yeah, I mean, to your point, like he doesn't have a whole bunch of great options. I mean, he's taken Thad and Sato out of that second unit, put it into the starting unit. The starters are performing better due to that fact, you know, you put more mature, experienced, ready-made sort of NBA players into that starting lineup. Lo and behold, the starting lineup looks a lot better, but now you're taking those guys out of the bench. The bench looks crappy. So I certainly take your point. And yeah, I guess I'm just dealing with it or trying to make the best of a very imperfect situation. But like I said, it's one minor complaint that I have. It's for whatever reason, rotational stuff is something that I just gravitate towards as a basketball fan. I don't know why, but it's something that irritates me at times. But it's certainly something that annoyed me a lot with Jim Boyle, and it's starting to creep in with Billy Donovan. But maybe I just needed a bit of a reality check. And you're right, the lineups, this rotation is, well, it can be sucky at times just due to the fact that this roster is a dog's breakfast at times. So maybe, hopefully, that that changes at the trade deadline. But obviously, we will find out in the coming days. But look, I don't want to keep you guys any longer. You've been very generous with your time. I appreciate getting you both on the show to help me talk Bulls basketball. But more importantly, I very much appreciate the fact that you guys have started your own show. Like I said from the top, I think you guys are doing something that not a lot of other Bulls podcasters are. You found a lane or a niche that I think you guys should be continuing to explore. And yeah, I'm just happy to see two of my mates get together and create something cool. So I appreciate you guys coming on Bulls HQ and sharing your thoughts. Before you get away, please feel free to plug your show, plug your Twitter, all that good stuff where Bulls fans can go and follow you online and catch the podcast, catch your ramblings, etc. on Twitter and those sorts of things. So please feel free to plug away.
Before we do that, can we just shout out our brother C Red Fred and his boy Denzel tonight?
Do we have to give Fred any more airtime?
Larry, you're never going to get invited back to this podcast if you keep on the direction you're going.
Hey,
no, go on. Give Fred some love, I suppose.
16 minutes, 2 points, 0 for 4 from the floor, 0 for 4 from 3, 1 rebound, 1 assist, 1 turnover. And again, 16 minutes, but he was negative 23 in plus minus.
Hey, if I knew you were going to trash Denzel and then by proxy trash said C-Red Fred, we could have done an entire 10-minute segment on it for Lara. So that's good. He's definitely not going to follow you. I mean, well, I was just giving you an opportunity to plug you guys, but Fred is definitely not going to be plugging you after hearing this.
Let me salvage this real quick. Denzel has been a competent rotation player this year.
No, sorry.
I'm going to
mute your mic. No.
All right. Well, I'll plug the show for a minute here. So the reason Lero and I made Bulls 101 is as you mentioned, Mark, I really feel like the niche of more in-depth basketball analysis is kind of a rare thing to find nowadays in a podcast or show form. And what we really wanted to do is not just tell you and give opinions and takes or whatever, but show you with the actual data, with actual film breakdown, what's happening on the court, why the coaches are doing certain things, why the players are doing certain things. And I think it'll give everybody a chance to appreciate basketball at a deeper level and really understand what's going on and identify the problems that are plaguing this team. I don't think it's as dire as many of us are prone to think it is. But if you guys want to check us out, we're on every Saturday night I forget the time, 11 p.m. Central. It's different. I'm on Pacific time. So it's 11 p.m. Central time. You can catch us at Bulls 101 Podcast. It's on the Barroom Network. That's at Bears Barroom on Twitter. They'll post the show. You can watch it live from Twitter. You can watch it live from YouTube. You can comment. We try and respond to comments. We put them up on the site, you know, and respond in real time. So it's been really fun for me and Lero. I know we've really enjoyed it. I hope the people that watch it really enjoy it as well. I know I've learned a whole lot more about basketball and about the Bulls since we started, and we've got great guests like Mark. I know you filled in for Lero last week, and we had Ryan Borja on this week, and we've got more guests coming up, so we're really excited about it. You guys can give us a follow. My Twitter handle is at KLA Hoops, and Lero is at underscore Lero Hoops. So you can get more of Lero's Kobe hate takes, as many as you would like. I'm just kidding. Don't be out on the young guys, Lero. Come on. They got time.
They got time. Yeah, but does Zach have time? We gotta go on Zach's time now, you know? So we'll see what happens. We'll see.
My personal mission is to corrupt Lero and make him as negative and dejected as I am. So I tried doing that with Chris, but you seem unbreakable. But maybe there's some scope to do that with Lero, so we'll see. But yeah, just quietly, guys, I think the second episode of Bulls 101 was probably the best that you guys have done, to be honest with you. So,
yeah, you guys should check that one out.
Just quietly, I might add.
Oh, man.
Anyways, enough good-natured ribbing. Like I said, I really appreciate you guys coming on, and this was much more fun for me. It's I always appreciate having guests on, particularly after rough games like this. We get the opportunity to laugh and commiserate, let's say, when the Bulls are bad. It's much better than me just being on the mic by myself. So I appreciate you guys coming on, sharing your thoughts and opinions. Very fun. And like the guy said, hit them up wherever you find basically any Bulls podcast. Go follow the guys. Get on Twitter. Follow them on there. And whilst you're doing that, do the same for me as well. At MK Hoops on Twitter, at Bulls HQ pod. If you want to be part of the Bulls Discord forum, come do that. Send me a DM on Twitter. We'll give you the link to come be part of that. There's almost 200 of us up in the Bulls HQ Discord. So if you want to be part of it, send me a DM. But that just about does it for this episode of Bulls HQ. Again, thanks to Lara and to Chris. We'll be back post deadline to talk about what the Bulls have done, or maybe haven't done, post the deadline. That'll be very interesting to discuss. It's going to be a fun couple days to be a basketball fan, but obviously it's from a Bulls perspective, it's going to be very intriguing to see what they do. But over to AK now. That's all we can do as fans. We can posit and get on the trade machine. We come up with our own ideas, but ultimately he's the one executing them. So let's see what he's got in store for us. But in terms of Bulls HQ, we're done here. Again, thanks to Lara and Chris. We'll be back post the deadline. Speak soon, Bulls fans.